KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives. And we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
Thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. The KBOO Evening News is next. The time is 5:01. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the EPA okays cyanide bombs to protect livestock from wild animals.
Walmart banned some violent video games.
And 5 years since Ferguson, what's changed and what has not?
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 9th, 2019. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. A new state law will encourage cities to allow construction of affordable housing options. Governor Kate Brown signed the law Thursday. It requires cities with more than 10,000 residents to allow housing alternatives to single-family homes. It will limit rent increases by about 10%. An estimated 2.8 million people live in cities affected by the law, and the lack of affordable housing is one cause of expensive rents. Oregon only produced 89 houses for every 100 families from 2000 to 2016. Many poured into the state for jobs and a lower cost of living.
On Sunday morning, it's time for the annual Providence Bridge Pedal Event, taking place on several Portland bridges. This event starts at 6 a.m. and ends at 9. The meeting location is Southwest NATO Parkway in Taylor. The bridges will be closing certain lanes to accommodate all those bicyclists and pedestrians. The bridges include Fremont, Steele, Selwood, Morrison, and others. Now, travelers, you should expect delays on the bridges and nearby roads before and after the event. All the bridges should be reopened at 12 noon. It's best to avoid downtown on Sunday morning. The MAX will still operate, but will be delayed due to train track operations. And make sure to come out from 6 to 9 in the morning for a fun time riding with your neighbors and friends for this once-a-year event on Sunday. Family and kids rides are available as well.
After the creation of the MBA's Mental Health and Wellness program last year, it appears the association is taking the issue of mental health seriously. Joining us now live to tell us more about it is KBOO's Jezaniah Hawthorne.
According to the Athletic Sports newspaper, the league will be starting new mental health initiatives, and all teams have to participate. Although specifics will not be made public until September 12th, rumored changes include licensed mental health professionals being made available to players at any time. Teams will also be required to have a written plan in case emergencies arise, as well as have confidentiality policies. This comes after several NBA players expressed the importance of maintaining mental stability. According to Sam Amick, a reporter for The Athletic, these players need the support. He says, quote, "When I meet with NBA players who have expressed concerns on this front, what strikes me is that they're truly unhappy." For KBOO News, I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne. Back to you, Linda and Annette.
All right. Thanks so much, Jezaniah. A new United Nations report calls for overhauling farming techniques to help solve some climate change problems. With more, here's the Green News Report.
It's Thursday, August 8, 2019.
The soil underneath our feet is one of humanity's most precious assets.
New UN report calls for overhauling farming techniques to solve climate change.
It should be criminal that you can write over $5 million worth of bad checks and nothing happened to you.
Kentucky miners block coal train after mine company bankruptcy. Plus, four fossil fuel explosions in 48 hours underscored the dangers of aging fossil fuel infrastructure.
All of those dangers underscored and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We cannot control the climate any more than they believed witches could control the climate. And don't forget, the witches were actually condemned by judges who were educated at Harvard. So this was the best and brightest who thought that witches influence the climate, causes crop failure, and that's where we are now with the Green New Deal.
Jesus, are they working hard at Fox News? Are they still on the air?
They are.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm sure you've got nothing but good news for us today on the Green News Report.
Well, there's a little bit of good news. A sweeping new scientific report warns that we need to overhaul food production dramatically to protect the global food supply from the consequences of man-made climate change.
That's the good news?
No, the good news is that although agriculture is a major emitter of greenhouse gases, it also offers a major opportunity to solve climate change.
Okay, I'll bite.
The report released on Thursday by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change finds that intensive industrial agriculture over the last few decades has depleted arable land and water supplies, and they warn that without action to adopt sustainable land use, our ability to feed ourselves will be irreversibly degraded.
I'm still waiting for the good news.
The good news is there is still time to repair that damage and feed a growing population. According to the director of the UN Environment Program, Inger Andersen.
The soil underneath our feet is one of humanity's most precious assets. And at a time when we can least afford it, we are losing fertile soil and biodiversity at an alarming rate. We need to adapt our land use to climate change so we can secure food production for present and future generations.
Farming and land use changes like logging account for about a quarter of global greenhouse gas emissions, so changing how we manage land can have a huge impact. The report details a comprehensive suite of actions that governments can take, including shifting towards vegetarian diets, reducing food waste, restoring wetlands and forests, and implementing regenerative farming techniques that do double duty in sequestering carbon emissions and restoring soil health.
Sounds like you're working as hard to come up with good news here as Fox News is to demonize the Green New Deal.
I try. A different study finds that 17 countries, representing about a quarter of the world's population, are at high risk of running out of water. The World Resources Institute report finds that India, parts of Africa, nearly all of the volatile Middle East, and four Western U.S. states are under extremely high water stress and at risk of using up all of their water resources. reserves. And it warns that man-made global warming will increase stress on fresh water supplies, driving food insecurity, financial instability, conflict, and migration.
Yeah, we're definitely not in the good news section anymore.
In other news, the state of Texas this week filed suit against oil giant ExxonMobil for violating state and federal clean air and water laws.
Well, that's good news.
It was in the wake of another fire and explosion at its massive refinery in the Houston suburb of Baytown on July 31st.
Oh.
37 workers were injured, nearby residents were ordered to shelter in place, and it was the second fire and explosion at that refinery in just 4 months. It was one of four refinery and pipeline explosions in just 2 days at the beginning of this month. A woman in Kentucky was killed when a gas pipeline exploded. A Colorado worker died in an explosion at an oil drilling site. And in Pennsylvania, five people were injured and a home destroyed after a natural gas service line undergoing repairs exploded. All of these explosions underscoring the dangers of our country's aging fossil fuel infrastructure.
And underscoring that no one was killed this week at a solar plant or a wind farm.
Finally, a bit of good news.
Finally!
For coal miners in Harlan County, Kentucky, they've been physically blocking a coal train for more than a week to demand unpaid wages from their employer, Black Jewel Mining, after it abruptly declared bankruptcy late last month, locked its gates, and allowed all of their paychecks to bounce.
Wow.
The company's actions are unprecedented, according to Harlan County Judge Executive Dan Mosley in an interview with the Louisville Courier-Journal.
These people worked for this company for a month for nothing.
The good news is that a federal bankruptcy judge has given preliminary approval for another coal company to buy that mine and give partial payments to the miners. But they say they may continue the blockade until they get cash in hand.
Like I said, not a lot of good news, but thank you for it anyway. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, good news or otherwise, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes,
you're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy and cool with a high of 75 degrees and a low of 62. Tomorrow's weather warm and sunny with a few hidden clouds. The high is expected to be around 77 degrees. Today in history, the famous American track and field athlete Jesse Owens won his fourth gold medal at the Summer Olympics held in Germany in 1936. He was excellent in the sprint and long jump events, and his long jump record stood for 25 years. The quote of the day is from Jesse Owens. He shared his secret to winning, quote, "I let my feet spend as little time on the ground as possible, from the air fast down and from the ground fast up," end quote.
It was 5 years ago in Ferguson, Missouri, protesters took to the streets after an 18-year-old unarmed man, Michael Brown Jr., was shot and killed by a police officer. A jury decided not to indict Darren Wilson, the police officer who shot Brown. The killing of Brown and other black men led to the Black Lives Matter movement, which fights against violence and systemic racism. Now, some change has happened in Ferguson since then. The city council now has 6 African-American members instead of just one. Also, the police staff is now half black, including the police chief. Even though some change has happened, residents say more work still needs to be done. They say black people continue to be stopped by the police and the poverty rate remains high. Kayla Reed, an activist who protested in the streets in 2014, felt empowered by the protests and wants to make her voice heard. Kayla says, quote, "Ferguson allowed me to understand the power of community organizing. I think Ferguson's uprising gave people a lot of courage to use the tool of protest." Many are becoming involved in organizations and criminal justice reform after the death of Michael Brown, including his father. Mr. Brown Sr. asked the prosecuting attorney to reopen his son's case today, quote, saying, "We're not stopping until we get justice." And today, there was a memorial service and a moment of silence for Michael Brown, along with an exhibit dedicated to him at a Ferguson Community Center.
In Maryland, a decision to loosen restrictions on gun permits runs counter to the trend in other states. KBOO's Imara Moore has more.
In Annapolis, Maryland, Maryland State Police announced this week that the state has lifted restrictions on concealed carry gun permits for business owners. The restriction has limited business owners to carrying handguns only when on the job or traveling to or from work. With the policy change, they will now be able to switch to unrestricted permits that allow them to carry handguns at all times. Liz Banach, director of the group Marylanders to Prevent Gun Violence, says she's outraged at the timing of the new policy, as the nation reels from two mass shootings just days ago that left more than 30 people dead.
Not only is it the wrong policy, right in the aftermath of these two mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, to be doing this now is both tone deaf and the wrong way to approach the issue of gun violence prevention.
Backers of the change say business owners should be able to protect their workers and their property. Bannock counters, research indicates the more permissive policy could lead to more violence and unintentional shootings. The Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence gave Maryland a grade of A- for its gun laws last year, ranking the state the fourth strongest in the country. But Nock maintains Governor Larry Hogan is undermining state gun control efforts by staffing the Handgun Permit Review Board with National Rifle Association supporters, whom she says are more lenient to granting permits. The governor, a Republican, also seems to be aligning on gun rights with the Trump administration, which has eased gun restrictions and reversed an Obama-era regulation that restricted gun purchases for people with some type of mental impairment.
Governor Hogan right now has the ability to stand up against that and say that that's wrong, and instead of doing that, his Maryland State Police are eroding and loosening our standard.
In 2017, Maryland has 742 firearm-related deaths, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In the 2019 legislative session, the General Assembly advances gun control laws by banning bump stocks and other rapid-fire trigger activators. For KBOO Evening News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Imara Moore.
After two recent shootings inside Walmarts, the stores are removing all violent video games and displays. It was a response to calls for action to remove signs and games that contain violent themes or aggressive behavior. According to a memo, Walmart employees are told to use their best judgment when deciding if an item is appropriate. Other rules require employees to turn off violent movies. Walmart CEO Doug McMillon said Walmart is being thoughtful in its responses. He said, "We will act in a way that reflects the best values and ideals of our company, with a focus on serving the needs of our customers, associates, and communities." However, Walmart says they're not going to stop selling guns in stores, even though many advocates urge them to.
And now it's time for Labor History in Two.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1965. That was the day 53 construction tradesmen were killed in a fire at the Titan II ICBM launch complex near Searcy, Arkansas. It is considered one of the worst industrial accidents at a U.S. nuclear weapons facility. The complex was one of four sites containing Titan II missiles. Each missile weighed 340,000 pounds, measuring 103 feet in length and 10 feet in diameter. President Johnson had just committed more troops to the Vietnam War. The Air Force had hoped to strengthen the silo against a possible Soviet attack. They had contracted with Peter Kiewit and Son of Colorado to bring in electricians, carpenters, millwrights, painters, and pipe fitters for a number of tasks. Crews worked to shore up the silo, improve the blast doors, adjust hydraulics, and install emergency lighting. 52 of the 55 workers on all 9 levels of the silo were almost immediately asphyxiated when it suddenly filled with smoke and heat. The Air Force determined a welder on level 2 had accidentally pierced a high-pressure hydraulic line, igniting the fire. Investigators also concluded that the silo lacked adequate ventilation, alternative exits, and independent power sources. The contractor was held responsible for numerous safety violations contributing to unsafe work conditions. The welder was found drowned in hydraulic fluid. Two survivors suffered burns and smoke inhalation. They contested the Air Force's findings. One worker insisted no one had been welding on level 2. The other survivor stated he saw flames burst from the diesel engine just before the power went out. Both men insisted the fire started from below. By 1981, two more deadly accidents involving Titan II missiles would prompt President Reagan to order their deactivation. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
The EPA has reauthorized the use of so-called cyanide bombs to kill wild animals in an effort to protect livestock. The spring-loaded traps called M44s, or cyanide bombs, are deployed by the USDA as well as Fish and Wildlife. Commonly used for protecting private livestock, the devices have received widespread criticism from environmentalists. In the months leading up to the recent EPA decision, conservation groups and members of the public flooded the agency with comments calling for a complete ban of the poison. Now, it's not complete yet. A final vote on the matter is expected in 2021.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal lawsuit about how the FBI handled a Crowman's murder will be tried by a judge, not jury. Olivia Reingold has more.
U.S. District Judge Sam Haddon denied Stephen Bear Crane's family's request for a jury trial Thursday and said he'd do one of two things: dismiss the case as the government has requested or hold a bench trial to settle disputed facts. Earlene Cole walked away from the Helena courtroom seeing a silver lining in the decision.
I am taking it as a win because we are moving forward. It was not dismissed.
Over a decade ago, Cole and her husband Cletus filed a case against the Federal Bureau of Investigations and others on behalf of their son, Stephen Bear Crane. Bear Crane, a Crow tribal member, was shot and killed by a white man on the Crow Reservation 14 years ago. The FBI determined he was killed in an act of self-defense, but his family maintains that he was murdered. In courtrooms across the country, from the 9th U.S. Circuit Appeals Court in Seattle to the U.S. Supreme Court, the Cole family has argued that their son's death was mishandled because of racism towards Native Americans. But Cole says for 10 years, she hasn't been able to address those claims.
Government keeps pulling up all these little technicalities. What happened to the murder of our son?
Bear Crane's family is arguing that they're entitled to victims' benefits because the FBI misclassified the shooting. Judge Haddon says he'll schedule a pretrial conference where both parties will meet to discuss things like the scope of the trial. The FBI did not respond to requests for comment made by phone and email on time for broadcast. For National Native News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Community members will have a chance to weigh in on Northern Arapaho business during a general council meeting set for Saturday in Ethiti, Wyoming. The agenda includes a vote to recall Chairman Lee Spoonhunter, a vote to terminate the contract with the legal firm, and a vote to bar a former legal team and a lobbyist from working with the tribe. The meeting comes as community members question decisions over gaming and the role of tribal advisors. The meeting is set to take place at 10 a.m. and is open to tribal citizens. The agenda states if a quorum of 150 members is not established by 10:30, a new date for the meeting will be set. Democrats in Iowa are inviting attendees of the Meskwaki powwow to join them Saturday as five Democratic candidates for president are scheduled to appear. Senator Cory Booker, Governor Steve Bullock, author Marianne Williamson, and former representatives John Delaney and Beto O'Rourke. The event is taking place a little more than a week ahead of a Native forum planned to be held in Sioux City. On Monday, forum host Four Directions announced Senators Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar confirmed their attendance. The other candidates expected to take part in the Native forum are Bullock, Williamson, Delaney, Senator Bernie Sanders, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, and independent candidate Mark Charles, who's Navajo. The two-day forum is an opportunity for members of the Native community to hear from the candidates on tribal issues. Tribal leaders and Native youth will pose questions to create dialogue. The Farmington Museum in New Mexico this week announced a gift of hundreds of Navajo rugs from the estate of a former Farmington city mayor. The Associated Press reports some of the pieces date back to the 1920s. The museum plans to keep much of the collection and sell others to benefit the museum and a new museum of Navajo art and culture, which opened last year. The United Nations is recognizing World Indigenous Peoples Day. This year's August 9th observance is dedicated to Indigenous languages and efforts to preserve, revitalize, and promote the languages around the world. A day-long celebration is taking place at UN headquarters in New York. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The National Indian Education Association is celebrating 50 years of building education nations, October 8th through the 12th at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Early bird registration ends July 12th at niea.org. Proud to support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Oregon today made national history with a new paid family medical leave law. Here's part of what Governor Brown said as she signed it at 11:15 this morning.
I'm very, very proud to be making Oregon history today. I think most of you know I got my start as an advocate for women and their families back in 1991. And one of the bills I worked on during that legislative session, I worked on with the coalition, they were all women advocates, and the bill was family medical leave. And when Governor Barbara Roberts signed that bill into law, Oregon became one of the first states in the entire country to make sure that parents could stay home and take care of their children or other loved family members without losing their job. But we knew back then that it wasn't enough, and we knew we needed to keep fighting to make sure that thousands of families could take advantage of this very important policy. I happened to also be the Senate Majority Leader when we had a vote on this very issue in 2007, but that vote didn't end very happily on the Senate floor. We lost paid family leave by one vote. So I am extremely grateful for this incredible coalition of advocates, the work that legislators did across the aisle and around the state to make this happen. I want to say a quick thank you. I don't see her here, but Speaker Tina Kotek for her leadership. Let's give her a round of applause. You all did it. We all did it working together. And we did it for the mother whose 7-year-old son had to have emergency brain surgery. She was fired from her job when she called to tell them she couldn't come into work that day. We did it for countless Oregonians who are caring for older family members, oftentimes balancing caring for young children and working jobs outside the home. We did it for people like a member of my staff who took a significant financial hit to provide childcare for his newborn daughter. He's a state employee, and his husband is a librarian at a private college that will remain nameless that has a $500 million endowment. This famously liberal college offers paid leave for parenting for faculty, but not for members of its staff. That is, its administrative assistants, custodial staff, and that's right, it's librarians. This college decided that its lowest paid employees were best suited to bear the financial burden of caring for newborn children. Well, I think this bill has changed that.
And again, that was Governor Brown signing Oregon's new paid family medical leave law, called the most progressive family leave policy in the entire country.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 9th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Ethan Fry, Lily Cruz, Jezaniah Hawthorne, and Annette Newell. The producer is Imara Moore, and our engineer is Sam Bowman. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of the KBOO Evening News. Have a wonderful weekend.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, listeners may have heard about the electronic soap dispensers whose light sensors can't detect black skin. Google and Flickr's automatic image labeling that, oops, tagged photos of black people with ape and gorilla. An Asian American blogger wrote about her Nikon digital camera that kept asking, did someone blink? And you can, I'm afraid, imagine what turns up in search engine results for three black teenagers versus three white teenagers. Some examples of discriminatory design are obvious, which doesn't mean the reasons behind them are easy to